Hey everyone, Jordan from the Sickos Committee here. We didn't record a new episode on April 7th due to folks traveling for the eclipse, so instead, we're sharing the first episode of our Patreon-exclusive series, The Prayer View Chronicles. Kamish and Blue from Feed Your Mascot Podcast are doing a deep dive into the history of athletics and circumstances around Prairie View A&M football's record-breaking 80-game losing streak. This is up your alley. You can join our Patreon, and for $5 a month, you get access to this podcast, Kamish's Corner, and Yes, Rah, 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 Yes, our marching band slash fight song podcast. Thank you, as always, for listening, and we'll talk to you again with another new episode of the podcast on Thursday.
Hey everybody, this is Kamish with the Sickos Committee here. Got a special Patreon or a Substack episode series coming up. We call these the Prairie View Chronicles, and I have a special guest with me, Blue from the Feed Your Mascot podcast, our resident HBCU expert, if that's okay to call you that, because I mean, he's got degrees from two, right? You know, Norfolk State and Howard. I got him on and I'm fascinated by this topic. I really can't find a piece of media on it that covers the enormous depth and scandal that takes place at Prairie View A&M University, and it leads to the longest losing streak ever in NCAA history. So I have Blue with me. What we're going to do on these episodes, we're probably going to have maybe about 3 or 4 hour long episodes for this, and we're going to go into details. The first episode, I want to just talk about the history of the university and basically leading up to the beginning of the losing streak. And, you know, we'll leave you on a cliffhanger there. So I really want to have everybody get to know Prairie View A&M, because the history of the university is incredible. It is something that you really got to know how crazy something like this would happen at a university like this, because this institution in the state of Texas is extremely important, has tremendous amounts of history. And I'm just going to let Blue go from here to start talking about the university itself and its founding.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Commissioner. I'm always glad to work with the Sickos. I try to write for you guys during the course of the regular season, so I enjoy it a great deal. But to get started with Prairie View A&M, we actually have to go back to around the time of the 17th Texas legislature. So this is after the Civil War. This is about 10 years after emancipation. And we actually have and I really want to put a pin on this, that these are two great men in the state of Texas. So you have Texas State Senator Matthew Gaines and Texas State Legislature, so this would be the lower house, William Holland. So these are both newly freed men. Both of them had previously been enslaved in Texas. They received their freedom after the Civil War. And when they get emancipation, they get elected. And so they get elected in Texas and they go to the legislature and they say, well, we have this new thing that came out from the federal government, the Morrill Land Grant College Act. Well, we should do that here in Texas. And so they begin writing legislation for an agricultural and mechanical university to come forth within Texas. And so what we get is Texas writes this law and we get the Agricultural and Mechanical College of Texas. Today, it's better known as Texas A&M University. However, at the time, the federal government requires if you're going to have one of these universities and you're going to segregate it, then there must also be an available institution for the newly freed men and women of the state. And so what we get from the machinations of these two men is Alta Vista Agricultural and Mechanical College for the Benefit of Colored Youth. And that is the first public HBCU in the Lone Star State. On the scene, we now have Texas A&M and we have Alta Vista A&M, and they are both, their birthday is the same day. So to secure this, they actually go and they find an old plantation. It's called the Alta Vista Plantation. The widow of Colonel Jared Ellison Kirby, his widow Helen Mary Swearinger, they actually sell, or she sells the plantation, or the land that the plantation is on, to the state of Texas. And the state of Texas gives this to the nascent university. And what we get is 1,400 acres of land that's now being used as a university instead of it's actually wasn't being used at all. But one of the impressive things that's going on right now is that Prairie View A&M is kind of researching and looking for any descendants of any of the formerly enslaved people who lived at Alta Vista. And recently they wrote an article saying they found a registry in Austin, and it had about 75 names, and they have done genealogy for 50 of those names. And that work is ongoing to celebrate the 150th anniversary of Prairie View A&M, which is coming up in 2026. But just really quickly on Helen Swearinger, she, in her own right, she goes on to become the first dean of the women at the University of Texas. She's the first dean of women. And so she goes on and has a career in education and is also the purveyor and sells that land for what becomes Prairie View A&M. As we go forward, 1945 rolls around. We start changing the name of the university. So it goes from Alta Vista to Prairie View Normal and Industrial College, and then eventually becomes Prairie View University. It becomes Prairie View A&M College of Texas in 1947, and then it gets the name that we all know it by, Prairie View Agricultural and Mechanical University in 1973. As a quirk of the way the Texas A&M system kind of operates, the A and M don't really mean anything. It's just it's a tribute to their agricultural and mechanical history. But the official name of Texas A&M University is Texas A&M University. And the same is true of Prairie View. So Prairie View's official name is Prairie View A&M University. And it's had that name since 1973. By 2021, Prairie View A&M is an R2 institution, and it's one of 11 HBCUs that holds this designation. It also boasts over 10,000 students. So this is one of the larger HBCUs, and it's one of the more widely recognized academic institutions within the HBCU community. Within that constellation, it really does shine brightly as one of the great schools, on top of being a land grant school. I wanted to ask the commish, though, from there, we go directly into the football history. And I wanted to know if you wanted to start that, if you're ready for that.
Yeah, we're ready to start the football history. I really love, if you don't know where Prairie View is, it's essentially, it's outside of like Houston and Katy, really not too far from the city itself. It's a little bit to the northwest of Houston and Katy. One of my friends, Andrew, actually attended and recently graduated from Prairie View A&M. So he was able to just like live in Katy and commute there at Prairie View A&M. So if you're not, you know, aware with where that location is, it's kind of almost in the same region as, you know, I'd say maybe Eric Dickerson. He lived in Sealy, which is, it's kind of a little bit outside of that Houston Katy corridor, a little bit off of I-10. The area is kind of incredible to think about. They had 1,400 acres there now, because that area is rapidly developing, and it's insane how big Katy and Houston are now. But yes, let's go right ahead and get into the football history of Prairie View A&M, because that's what we're doing here at the committee. We want to know this history of Prairie View. You know, I don't know if anybody has like a really good opinion of Prairie View A&M football, but in its infancy, this program was a powerhouse.
That's right. So they kind of start their first season in 1907. So to give a short history on HBCU football in general, the first game is played in December of 1892 in North Carolina, and it transfers rapidly across that area, the Middle Eastern, southeast of the United States. You know, teams start popping up all over the place. And by 1907, Prairie View A&M is kicking off their very first season. They play one game. We don't know which opponent. We don't know who won the game. We don't know who the coach was. We don't have any records of who any of the players
are. No, normally it's hard to get records for some of these schools, period. And then you add in the HBCU layer, it's even more difficult.
Yeah, so they don't even have a team after that. So they have a team in 1907, don't play any games in 1908. And they kind of go back and forth until after World War I. So after World War I, they have a few more teams. We don't know who the coach is. But the first season that we have records on is 1924, and the first coach who we can identify is Henry Boyd Hughes. Now, this is kind of important for me because he's a Virginia Union All-American. So he plays at Virginia Union, which is the oldest HBCU in the Commonwealth of Virginia. He plays on their football team, which was a power at the time at the nascent CIAA. And he studied physics. So like me, I feel some small connection to this coach, and he makes his way to Texas and he starts their football program, or at least puts records on. And he has kind of a middling time there. He doesn't win 100 games. He's only there a couple of years. But the second coach is the one I really think we should talk about, is James H. Law. He comes in and he starts the Prairie View Bowl. And so when we talk about bowl games for HBCUs, a lot of people have read Blood, Sweat, and Tears, the FAMU story, and they know about the Orange Blossom Classic. This is still played today. FAMU, that's their signature bowl game. It's around homecoming. They bring everybody back into Bragg Stadium, and it's a big party for and celebration of FAMU Rattler football. Well, this is happening all over HBCU ball, and Prairie View's version of this is the Prairie View Bowl, and that gets its start 1926, and that's an end-of-the-year celebration of the Prairie View A&M Panther football team. They bring people back. It's tantamount to homecoming, because I want to be clear, homecoming is a separate event. The Prairie View Bowl is its own thing. Immediately after that, we get the Sam B. Taylor administration. He's another Virginia man. He actually goes to Northwestern. He's a Wildcat, gets his degree there, and he wins 3 black national championships over the course of his career, 2 of them with Prairie View A&M. He wins over 160 games over his 40-year coaching career, all of them at HBCUs, all of them against HBCUs, and that includes 10 bowl games over the course of his time as coach. So this is a, like you said, Commissioner, they have great success very early. So around the start of...
Oh, no, I was just saying yes. I was agreeing.
Yeah. So this is around the time black newspapers all over the country are starting to select, hey, this team had the best season amongst the HBCUs. We are awarding them a national championship. After Coach Taylor retires, we get the greatest coach in the history of Prairie View A&M. This is Coach Billy Nix. And in his career, he coaches for 35 years, and this is over 2 different programs. He has 193 wins at Morris Brown and Prairie View A&M. He wins 6 black national championships, 7 SWAC championships. He wins the Vulcan Bowl, the Prairie View Bowl. He goes and wins the Orange Bowl Classic against the great Jake Gaither. So we always talk about coaches we know. We know Eddie Robinson Jr. We know Jake Gaither. At the time that these guys are active, Coach Nix is also running around, and he is winning against these guys, and he's winning games. And he, against these other coaches, has 3 undefeated seasons. He goes 12-0 in 1953, 10-0-1 in 1958, 9-0 in 1964. And I want to also stress this. To prove that his team can go against anybody, he takes his team to the NAIA championship game in 1963. So there, at the time, and this is a little bit of a confusion, because Prairie View A&M is firmly in the SWAC. They are playing a SWAC schedule. They are playing SWAC teams, but they are not in the SWAC for all sports. They're an independent in some other sports. So they're a baseball independent. They're a barnstorming baseball team. Basketball team kind of bounces around. They play in the SEAC some years. They kind of hang around the SWAC other years. They don't truly commit with a capital C to the SWAC until 1935. And again, teams come in and out of conferences a little more fluidly at this time. It's not way we know it today, where you have a huge exit fee.
Yeah, we didn't have... back before, I think like 73, when the NCAA started to log their rules with conferences and everything like that, hey, you have to be in this conference, and this conference must sponsor X amount of sports. You can't be a football only conference. So once that started to happen, Prairie View really got locked into the SWAC. You mentioned Coach Eddie Robinson. I was able to find a quote from Eddie Robinson talking about him playing Prairie View back in the day here with, Coach Billy Nix. He said he did not like to play Prairie View at all. He said he always had trouble with them, and he did not like going to Texas to face Prairie View A&M. whatsoever. And I mean, just looking at the record with you know, the coach Billy Nix, I mean, as you put in the notes here, 3 undefeated seasons in 53, 12-0, 10-0-1 in 58, 1964, 9-0. And you're talking about the NAIA championship game in 1963 right now.
Absolutely. And it's really even worse for Coach Robinson, because Grambling and Prairie View A&M have a small rivalry where they play at the Texas State Fair every year, because they said, this is an opportunity. Grambling and Coach, Commish, I'd like for you to kind of elaborate on this. It's closer to drive to Dallas for Grambling than it is to drive to Baton Rouge or even New Orleans in Louisiana.
Yeah. So Grambling is North Louisiana, and there's not a direct route to New Orleans where Grambling is. Same with like where I was at ULM in Monroe. Like, you have to do this weird loop, and it's just not a direct route. Either you go to Jackson and then you go straight down Interstate 55 to like Hammond. And then you got to go to, you know, New Orleans about an hour from that point. Or you can take some back roads and take you about 3.5 hours to get to Baton Rouge and then go that way, which is ridiculous. So Grambling is basically, I'd say, maybe about an hour from Shreveport, and it's really like 3 hours. And then Prairie View getting to Dallas, they could just take 45, Interstate 45. It's like 4 hours. So it's almost like an even meeting point. But when you look at geography, like, it's just, it's weird that they're closer together, but there's no direct route to get to these two places.
Correct. And again, they start playing at the Texas State Fair before the Red River rivalry begins playing their annual game at the Texas State Fair. And they still play the week before to this day. So just another small tidbit of HBCU history there. Anyways, Coach Billy Nix, he has a great career. He hangs up his whistle and clipboard and then goes on and becomes the AD, where he's the AD for another decade or so at Prairie View A&M. And then he finally retires. And then we start to get the first signs of decline and trouble at Prairie View A&M. So their last winning season after this is 1976, and they go 6-5. And then that point on, they have an average losing margin by a great number. I know you've got a couple of notes here. You know, in 1987, you know, we have Coach Conway Hyman. You know, he plays Southern and they get blown out. He has a record of 0-3-1, and this is the end of his time as coach. He's replaced by, and really he's the villain of our story, this next coach, Coach Haney Catchings. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah. So what I did here is just basically going to give a little bit of foreshadowing of the characters that come up in this incredible losing streak that I don't think is ever going to be matched. I honestly don't think a school will go like more than what Columbia's record was, which was like 40 something games. I never see a school touching this. The 80 game losing streak. So this is one of the main characters of the story here. It's Coach Haney Catchings. He took over in 1987 as the interim head coach. So as you said, Conway Hyman was fired. He went 0-3-1 in 1987, replaced with the interim head coach Haney Catchings. He finished the season in 87 at 4-3. The team finished overall 4-6-1. They finished winning 4 out of their last 6 games in 1987. As we said before, Catchings is going to be a very prominent figure throughout this series, and he is a major contributor to many of the problems that lead to this ridiculously long losing streak. In 88, Catchings was hired full-time as a head coach after the 87 season due to the promising season finish.
Yeah, so Coach Catchings comes in. Coach Catchings has an extensive history coaching at the HBCU level. He had been an assistant at a few places. He was on staff at Prairie View A&M for a little while before he actually gets the interim tag, and then they take the tag off. He becomes the head coach. One of the things about Coach Catchings, and I know we'll get into this, but one of the reasons why he starts this decline is he starts putting incentives in front of players where to get their book money, they have to perform to the standards he selects. And that starts to become a problem because, as you've noted, this 5-5 season they have in 1988 is their first non-losing season in almost a decade.
Technically, it was a non-losing season, but in the NCAA record books, they actually got penalized and they had to forfeit a game. So Mr. Catchings used an ineligible player and they had to forfeit their win to Southern, their 2014 win over Southern. So the official record was not a non-losing season. So that got taken away from them due to some violations by Coach Catchings using an ineligible player. Honestly, they would have gotten another game taken away from them. But apparently them and Texas Southern both decided to use ineligible players. And those are offsetting penalties. Cancel the forfeit, I guess. Because that's what the SWAC ruled in this situation. They're like, hey, they use an ineligible player. You can keep your win. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. I mean, this is the 1980s. The way that some, say, larger institutions have entire compliance departments. And they have entire staffs of people whose only job is to ensure that players maintain their eligibility. A small HBCU doesn't have those resources. A large HBCU doesn't have those resources. Prairie View A&M did not have a compliance department, still doesn't have a compliance department, and just could not ensure all of their players were keeping up with their academic standards or whatever the reasoning may have been to prevent any sort of ineligible players being played. And so I think it was fair for SWAC to say, look, you both used ineligible players. The game played out the way it did, and we're not going to mark him out. I get that. The SWAC has done that before. If you look through the SWAC's history, they have a lot of kind of looking the other way on some of these teams that may or may not have had, quote, eligible players before the NCAA starts to really ramp up its enforcement arm.
The article stated it says SWAC penalizes Prairie View. They announced penalties against Prairie View on Tuesday for using an ineligible player in games. The football team won against Southern and in Texas Southern. The penalties imposed on the Texas school by the conference included a public reprimand, a censure, and then a forfeiture of the game against Southern, a fine of an undisclosed amount, and a recertification by the university that its current policies and practices conform to requirements in the SWAC manual and the NCAA regulations. The other part, I love this article, like Prairie View was not required to forfeit the Texas Southern game because Texas Southern also used an ineligible player and faces penalties that will be announced later, Conference Commissioner James Frank said in a news release. I've never seen that before. Have you heard of, like, you know, both teams using an eligible player and there's like, okay, the game counts, nobody gets to forfeit anything?
I've seen games where both player teams had ineligible players, but both teams had to forfeit the game. And that would be if you look at, I believe it's Georgia Tech, when they went and won the ACC in 2009, there's another team that winds up having to forfeit on that schedule. And so neither team is able to count that game at all.
So it's just like the game never happened.
The game just never happened.
Never happened. It was never played. And get that out of your memory.
Get it out of your memory didn't count. I do want to point out, if you look at Texas Southern, Texas Southern is one of the other HBCUs in the state of Texas. It's one of the other public HBCUs. It's actually in Houston. Texas Southern plays Prairie View A&M in what I'd like to say is a contentious named game called the Labor Day Classic. They have been playing this game with each other for a long time. It has not always been called the Labor Day Classic. I would like to point out that the oldest named and most consistently named Labor Day Classic is between Norfolk State University and Virginia State University. Prairie View A&M and Texas State will argue that they've been playing it longer. We just didn't call it that. And I'd say that's fine, but you have to call things what they are. And Norfolk State, yeah, they got to call it. Norfolk State and Virginia State have called it since 1991, the Labor Day Classic.
Okay.
But of course, we're not going to argue too much. These two teams have been playing each other a long time. Maybe not consistently, but they've been playing a long time.
Okay. All right. Maybe is there one like the Deep South Labor Day Classic or the Texas Labor Day Classic? And then you can have the other one, like the official Labor Day Classic. Can we broker a divide of the Labor Day Classic here?
I don't know that we can, because Virginia State was going to say, well, we've been playing football longer than all of you, so I don't see why we have to change anything. And again, Virginia State's, you know, they helped found the CIAA, so I'm not going to.
Okay. All right.
I'm not going to go ahead and argue with them too much.
We don't want to anger Virginia State. All right, we got it.
We don't want to do that. You don't want the Trojans to be mad at you. All right. You go to war that way. But as we carry on in 1989, catching causes even more problems. And you've got something from the Abilene Reporter News here. They launch a probe at Prairie View A&M.
So this is kind of what you were mentioning earlier. You were mentioning that there was an issue that Catchings was trying to incentivize the players to get book money, to get many other different things. So there was a probe launched on February 1989. So this is after the 88 season. He's got the trouble with the ineligible players in two different games. Now Catchings has got a little bit more trouble here. So Prairie View A&M's president says he will launch an internal investigation into the allegations by striking football players. So the Prairie View A&M players started to strike against their head coach. They claim the coach was blocking their education. So as you're telling them, they're like, hey, they have to do this stuff to get books. They have to do all this stuff. The student athletes at Prairie View A&M are actually picketing Catchings. They are striking. So then the university president has basically forced to take action. University president Percy Pierre decided to investigate the claims after meeting with 55 football players in a closed meeting on Tuesday night. Specifically, this investigation will consider any possible violations of university rules and or NCAA rules, Pierre said. Prairie View is a member of both the NCAA Division I AA, which is now FCS, and the Southwestern Athletic Conference. The players who began their walkout last week. So this was going on for a week before this occurred. So they have vowed to remain on strike until Haney Catchings is fired. They wanted their coach fired as the Panthers head coach, but Pierre said it is too soon to speculate on the coach's future at Prairie View. So you essentially have a player mutiny on your hands right now. The players are striking against this coach. They want him out, and they're trying to force the president's hand. The president has said, again, we will take the appropriate action based on what we find through the investigation, said Pierre, who added that no deadline on the investigation had been set. Striking players have charged that Catchings has stymied their academic growth during his 1.5 years as head coach. Players also claim Catchings put them through unsafe drills, held frequent 6-hour practices, and threatened to suspend scholarship funds if athletes did not produce on the field. As you like foreshadowed, this is some crazy stuff happening. And Catchings has essentially only been as the head man for a year and a half. He had some time at Prairie View, you know, like 86, 87. He really came from like Albany State, his alma mater's Alcorn State. I've only read about another mutiny against like their coach. And this was like 1956 Washington, where they mutinied against the coach. And then the Pacific Coast Conference kind of basically fell apart and then later became the Pac-10 or Pac-8. The coach that got mutinied against became the lieutenant governor of the state of Washington. This is a little bit different scenario here. You have, I mean, this is like highly visible. They're striking for a week. They are forcing the president to investigate all of these allegations. They want the coach fired. They are calling for his head.
Absolutely. And this is actually one in a long line of HBCU teams that have gone on strike. And so I want to paint another picture for you. This is recent memory. This is in the last decade. So in 2011, the Grambling football team goes on strike, and they're on strike because they're taking these paycheck games. So they're taking multiple paycheck games a year. Yep. They're riding the bus to go play these games. So they're getting on the bus and they're riding up to Oklahoma and they get blown out. They have to ride the bus back home. And then the next week they're getting back on the bus and they're riding up to West Virginia to get blown out. And administrators at Grambling are flying. So they're on 16-hour bus rides, getting blown out. The equipment's not being cleaned appropriately.
I remember this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They go on strike.
So yes, this is not unprecedented. Doesn't happen in often
this case,
here.
Though, in this case, they were upset.
Oh yeah.
And if you permit me for a minute, I want to talk about Dr. Percy Pierre, who is the current
go right
at our point in the story. He's the president of Prairie View A&M. Dr. Pierre is the first African-American to receive a PhD in electrical engineering. He gets that from Johns Hopkins University out here in Maryland. He actually attends Notre Dame to get his bachelor's and master's on a full scholarship. He becomes the dean of engineering at Howard, the president of Prairie View A&M. He becomes the assistant secretary of the Army at one point and is still alive, currently teaching electrical engineering as a professor emeritus at Michigan State University. So Dr. Pierre shows up and says, okay, well, I got to get to the bottom of this. And he determines, Coach Catchings, you're not quite doing what you're supposed to as a leader of men, as we hope to be a motor of young people to get them to where they're supposed to be. And to answer your question about Coach Catchings, he was the offensive coordinator on the last team for the last head coach. So the head coach that gets fired, 0-3-1, he's that offensive coordinator. He turns the team around and wins four games, and they give him the full-time job, which looks more and more precarious as the years go by. And again, you've got it written down here, their last win is in this 1989 season, where they go and they beat Mississippi Valley State, which is, and we've talked about this before on other episodes, they're coming off of the greatest team they've ever had in 1984 with Satellite, Willie Totten, and all-world Jerry Rice.
Yes.
Now in 1989, they're the last win for Prairie View A&M.
Yeah.
Because immediately after that, we get, and we can always debate whether the NCAA can issue something called the death penalty. They don't get the chance to, because Prairie View A&M takes it upon themselves to shutter their football program for a season and other sports.
This is kind of something that you can kind of see the writing on the wall. Catchings doesn't catch anything from this. He's still the coach. He's still the head coach. The players wanted him out. He's still on the staff. He is still the head coach. He's still the, you know, there is a lot of different things that he's still the coach. In 1989, Catchings is the coach. It's still baffling to me that, you know, really, they wanted Catchings to go. But whatever President Pierre found wasn't enough to get rid of them. And it wasn't enough to get rid of them, even though the players were calling for his head. So in 1989, Prairie View that season, they finished 2-8 in this, but essentially they were really 1-9 if you think about it. So this entire year, the players kind of felt like they were quiet quitting, if you want to put it this way, because they didn't really seem to be buying in with this coach this year, which is completely understandable. Their season, there was really nothing close for the season until maybe towards the end of the year. So their first game against Texas Southern, which is that Labor Day classic, which we can't call it that. Can we say, like, don't wear white after this day classic? I mean, is that workout?
I say this is their show. We can call it the Labor Day classic for them, because it is their show.
I
just want to
make sure. I don't want
and
to
they call it that. I don't know why they call it that, but they call
they
it
do.
That.
All right. I'm gonna click on Labor Day Classic, and then it says there's a Wikipedia, but then there's like, hey, there's another one, and I'm like, like, okay. So first game of the season, you know, as I said, they're kind of quiet quitting here. They get blown out by Texas Southern, 45-7. Like, it was not close, just a ridiculously blowout game. The next game, they go to Southwest Texas State, which is now known as the Texas State Bobcats. They go to San Marcos, and they get blown out 41-0. Their motivation is probably crushed. They wanted to get rid of the coach. Maybe there's a little bit of vindictiveness, or maybe some of the players just like, hey, he's still the coach. I'm not going to play for the team, or I got to keep my scholarship, whatever. Next game, they're back home. They welcome Jackson State. They lose 66-0. So they've scored seven at home. They lose 66-0. They get crushed again this entire year so far, right? I just want to say they've scored 7 points. 7 points.
Up to this point.
To this point, they've scored 7 points. Next week, they don't score many more either. But they've given up 45, 41, and 66 points. They've been outscored 152-7 in their first three games.
And they kick a field goal in the only game that they played at home in Prairie View. They scored zero. And then they next week, they have to go and they're playing their games at Kyle Field. So they're playing at Texas A&M's stadium when Southern comes to town.
Yeah, so they play Southern at Kyle Field. They lose 34-3. So they're up to 10 points on the season. Their defense played a little bit better. So, you know, it's great.
They kept them under 40.
186-10 right now is the scoring difference. As you mentioned before, it's the State Fair Classic time. They are going to the Cotton Bowl on September 30th, 1989. They are facing Grambling State, as they do in the State Fair Classic. Nearly 60,000 folks in attendance to watch Prairie View lose to Grambling State 39-0. So, yes.
I want to point out that Grambling team went undefeated in SWAC play. So, this is the best team in the SWAC, and they get obliterated in the biggest stadium. The biggest stadium they'll play on all year. I don't want to say the Cotton Bowl is bigger than any of the big state schools. So forgive me.
I don't think the Cotton Bowl is bigger than Aggie Kyle fans. Field, but
it's not. But yeah. This is the biggest stage that
for them
that Prairie View plays on. It's in the Cotton Bowl, and they lose 39-0 in front of 59,000 people.
The next week they go up to Little Rock to play University of Arkansas Pine Bluff. This one was actually close. They scored their most points that they scored all year. They lost 35-32, but Pine Bluff had to forfeit the game. It had to forfeit all of their games in 1989 for ineligible players. So Prairie View technically gets this win, even though they lost 35-32, probably their best offensive performance all year long. You know, they had to forfeit everything. It was incredible. It's just, they had to forfeit all last season, 7 victories and a tie, a violation. The school is of ongoing probe. The forfeit 8 games. And this is an NAIA school. So this is not Division I. So Prairie View's closest game at this point was against an NAIA school, Pine Bluff. They're no longer an NAIA school. But at the time, they were. They finally got some points on the board. That's nice. They got to go to Alabama State next week. And they don't get any points on the board. They lose 47-0. At the Crampton Bowl there. Only 7,000 in attendance to see that one, so it wasn't too bad, I guess.
I want to point one thing out, because you said that their best performance at that point was an NAIA school. The next week after this game, when they go and they get their only win against Mississippi Valley State, they win at home, 21-12, they beat the Delta Devils. They play Langston. Langston University is the only HBCU in Oklahoma. And it is also an NAIA school, and they lose that game by 1 point. So even though they're playing multiple NAIA schools, they're losing to them.
Yeah.
That's the state of affairs that this team is in 1989.
Yep. I'm just going to say something here. We're going to see Langston again towards the end of this series. We sure are. So it's funny how they start it and how they end it. Oh, wow. Amazing. It's amazing how it works.
Great writing, Kamish.
Yeah, I didn't write this, but I mean, it's the story that we can tell.
I've made this argument multiple times. There is something, and as a physicist, this sticks out to me. There is something to be said about the revolution and how revolution works in football. So from the rotation of a football when you throw it to the cyclical nature of having the ball, giving the ball away if you punt or kick off, to the clock that we use to measure a game, to the fact that we do this every year, there is a cyclical nature to the game of football. And Langston is going to be important later.
They will. They play a big role towards the end. And it multiple times they'll come back up in the story. So their last win in 1989, win, I'll put in quotes, like an actual win.
Absolutely.
They beat the Mississippi Valley State Delta Devils. They win 21-12, and its first SWAC victory. For the second straight week, the Delta Devils outgained opposition in total yardage, but they lost. The Delta Devils had 301 yards of offense to Prairie View's 144. They doubled their yardage, and they lost 21-12 to Prairie View. Problem here, you know, Mississippi Valley State had about four interceptions. Prairie View took one kick return for the house. I'm sorry, interception two. I'm sorry. Prairie View did everything not on offense here. They had a 50-yard interception return for a touchdown, an 80-yard pass interception return for a touchdown, and then they had a 96-yard kickoff return for touchdown. So the Prairie View offense didn't do anything. All of their points.
Well, hold on. And I know you're probably going to get to it. The offense fumbled four times.
Yeah.
This is Prairie View.
This is Prairie View.
And they lost two of them.
They lost two of them.
They did something.
They also threw three interceptions.
They did.
But they didn't throw pick sixes. So
that does matter. That does matter.
Apparently that does matter. So this was kind of an incredible Sickos game for Prairie View to win this. Just outgained.
It is.
Double yardage. They scored two touchdowns on defense, and they scored a kick return for a touchdown. And this is their last win for nearly a decade. For nearly a decade. Their next win doesn't come until 1998.
Prairie View completes eight passes total in this game.
Well, I mean, if you count the three to the other team, it's 11, but
that's fair. Okay. You know what? I hadn't thought of that. Which means that the 20 passes that Mississippi Valley completed is actually 24 because
four of them went to the other team. I mean, they had
two of them went for touchdowns.
Too. I know.
it's interesting to me that I would have loved to watch this game if we can find archive footage.
Oh, God,
I doubt any exists.
Yeah.
But this is, I just want to read kind of the last two paragraphs of the article that comes from the Clarion Ledger. Prairie View led 14-12 at halftime. Allen Richardson took the second half kickoff and returned it 96 yards for the Panthers' final touchdown. Prairie View improved to 1-7 overall and 1-4 in the SWAC. Valley, 1-7 and overall and 1-5 in the WAC, plays Alcorn State next week.
Yeah. So
that's a biting statement.
That's
a biting two sentences.
So that is their last win for a decade, October 28th, 1989. Their next game is they're at Langston. And as you mentioned before, they were NAIA at the time, which I think they still are, right? Okay.
They still are.
So they go to Oklahoma to play Langston. They lose 19-18. This game had Langston rally from an 18-6 first half deficit. So Prairie View blew an 18-6 lead to an NAIA team in front of Langston's homecoming crowd. And they won 19-18 by winning with an extra point, essentially. Here. So this was game one of the 80-game losing streak. Game two was the last game of the season. They went up to Natchez, Mississippi to face Alcorn State, and they got blown out 56-7, thus ending 1989. The headline says Alcorn roars back. Apparently, Prairie View took the lead 7-0.
Well, there you go. I want to put a pin and a button. I want to tie a nice ribbon on this.
Okay.
Because I didn't get to talk about this in the history of Prairie View A&M. So for a single season, Prairie View A&M has what I think is a first team all name American as head coach. His name is Theophilus Danzy. And he coaches Prairie View A&M for one season. He actually is the head coach of the Alcorn State football team in 1989 for the second loss of the 80-game losing streak. He's the one that led them to a 56-7 victory over Prairie A&M
Panthers. Say the name again. It's worth it. Do it again.
The name of this coach is Coach Theophilus Danzy.
Theophilus.
Danzy. He has a great career. He coaches at Prairie View, Alabama A&M, Miles College, Alcorn, and then finishes out his career at Stillman. So he has a great career. He doesn't win any championships, but has a solid career, taking programs from where they are to where they're going. So
Alcorn was solid that year too. I think they were like 4-3 in the SWAC or 5-2 in the SWAC and 7-3 overall. They had a really solid year. And Prairie View, you scored. You didn't get shut out this time. So
they had the lead.
Prairie View. Yeah, had a lead. The offseason arrives and trouble begins. In May of 1990, Prairie View decides to drop most sports for 5 years. They're dropping sports. The article, which I have linked for you in the DMs if you needed it, it's called Opposites Dropped. All right. So it's written by Mark Evangelista from the Houston Chronicle. Prairie View, citing the need to To get our house in order, Prairie View A&M President Julius Becton Jr. announced that the school will drop all intercollegiate sports except track and field for 5 years. The measure will save the school 70 scholarships worth $300,000 annually in student fees. Becton, who was appointed president in November 1989, you notice President Pierre got out of there, right?
Sure did. He did. Left town.
He left. He was like, okay, Catchings is here. I'm out of here. So Becton appointed president in 1989. He said he made the decision in the past 2 weeks and realizes that some hard-charging alumni will be disappointed, but we have a commitment to academics. I would rather fix things than put a Band-Aid on it. This is not the place to rah-rah and raise hell. Over the last 5 years, the athletic program has a $3 million deficit. The 1990 budget of $1.078 million was offset by revenues of $600,000. During the last session, the legislature placed a rider on the appropriations bill for the school, stating that if Prairie View was not able to get fiscal matters in order by August 31st, the institution would be placed in conservatorship. So basically, the university was in danger of just basic not existing. So I do
wonder about that, because being a Morrill Act school, they're getting appropriations not just from the state of Texas, they're getting them from the federal government. So even if they had a rider from the state and were put into conservatorship, they would have had federal government money that may have been able to keep their doors open.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that would have been the case.
Definitely.
I just want to put that out there.
Yeah. So don't know for sure what exactly would occur there. So one of the deciding factors was that Prairie View would no longer receive $6 million annually from the University of Texas's share of the available university fund, the AUF, after 1994. The AUF comprises the earning of the permanent university fund derived from West Texas oil payments. Prairie View's bond from the PUF for the future includes $6 million for a new science building and $1.5 billion to refurbish the old education buildings. Becton said he was going to meet with SWAC officials in New Orleans to discuss the school's action. The school hopes to return to the SWAC, he said. We'll go wherever we can. We'll work our way back. If we don't find out we won't be ready in 5 years, then it's clear we don't deserve a program. Becton said he had reached a verbal agreement with Huston Tillotson's Edward Plummer as a basketball coach. Plummer will join the faculty and work with the intramural department. No agreement has been reached with former Yates football coach Luther Booker, but talks will continue because Catchings got fired, right?
He does get fired, yes.
Yes, he does. During the he
also gets another job.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this. He gets another job.
That'll come up in next episode, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure.
More foreshadowing, yeah.
Becton said he'd rather see the money be spent on dorms or the cafeteria. We just need to put the money back where it belongs. Academics is and should always be number one priority. The track program was kept because when we first took a look, we found that track was the most successful program we had. They were chosen for the 1992 Olympics in Barcelona, Spain. Coach Barbara Jackett's headlines a women's track program that has been perennial SWAC team champions. So the track head coach, Barbara Jackett, this is our first mention of her. She's going to come up again too. She's been chosen for the 1992 Olympics as a coach for the U.S. team in Barcelona, Spain. She's coming up too in the next episode.
Don't worry. We didn't forget about her either.
So this is basically what happens here. They're suspending the program. Then
all programs. Almost all programs.
All programs for 5 years except track. Track is still alive because track, you know, we're hooked in with the Olympics, right? We're hooked in here. And we're going to leave you on this piece for episode one. So you remember I said this was May 26th, right?
That's right.
June 13th, 1990. Prairie View president says $100,000 is missing. Prairie View A&M had asked the Texas Rangers to investigate the disappearance of about $100,000 in missing athletic department receipts, Prairie View President Julius Becton said Tuesday night. Becton, speaking to about 150 Prairie View A&M alumni at the Wheeler Avenue Baptist Church, gave few details about the missing money, other than to say it occurred during a previous administration and that the case is being probed by the Texas Rangers, the investigative arm of the Department of Public Safety, Where could that
look?
Money
it's not me.
Go?
Look, it wasn't me. No, it wasn't me. It was the last guy. He lost $100,000.
No, the other guy. The president also told alumni that the university, which dropped all sports except track last month in the midst of a budget crunch, has raised enough money to revive its basketball and baseball programs, but not football. Becton told the crowd he will stop mismanagement at the school. Becton says, if mismanagement exists through my administration, you have my resignation. We will account for every penny, with the exception of those individuals who are being investigated actively by the Texas Rangers. Becton, who took office on December 18th in 1989, decided to drop athletics, except for track, on May 25th. But as late as January 20th, he said he was convinced Prairie View could retain its athletic program. It was not until then I found out we didn't have funds to go through the summer. We just did not have the money. When can we get the funds and some kind of guarantee and do not have to draw money from other school funds? Then I'll be more than happy to sign the dotted line to bring back athletics. Becton said, even if money is raised to provide football, SWAC conference teams have already adjusted their schedules without Prairie View. He said the school...
So before you go forward...
Go ahead.
I do want to say this. We know the SWAC today to be a 14-team league. The SWAC had 9 teams at the time. They didn't have a full... This is before the NCAA allows for lower levels to have conference championship games or divisions, yep, or to separate their company. Anyway, everybody played round robin. At the time, the SWAC was only a single-digit league, and now they are short one team. So this is a lot like what happened to the Southwestern Conference not that long before this happened, with Southern Methodist being unable to play for 2 seasons.
So alumnus Ben Durant had some things here. Said, you were influenced by bad information, said Durant, drawing applause from the crowd, many of whom were caustic towards Becton. Prairie View has been victimized by shoddy fiscal management that has directly resulted in the current state of affairs. It is now time to acknowledge that there has been an investigation for some time by certain officials into the fiscal policies that have plagued not only the athletic department, but the university in general. Durant noted that the football players this spring did not have their fees paid because of an oversight. Becton said the problem was resolved quickly. When Durant asked why Becton still kept the same management team that allowed a $6 million in the school building fund to drop to zero, now $6 million is missing? Becton said he would not announce changes in his team at this time. It is my management team, mine. One local Prairie View alumni chapter president said his chapter has raised $10,000 for Prairie View, but will not give it to the school until the chapter knows where the money will go. Just gonna leave it there.
This is a common occurrence among HBCUs where money is tight, and sometimes bookkeeping is not always to the high standards that are expected. And this is one of the many cases where alumni begin to question where money is going and how is it being spent if basic university functions are not being cared for. I do want to talk about, at this time, President Julius W. Becton Jr. He's actually a retired 3-star general from the U.S. Army. He was a lieutenant general. He had served his country with distinction. He was well decorated by the time he takes the job at Prairie View A&M. He's a Prairie View A&M alumni, and he's the first Prairie View A&M graduate to become a flag officer. So when he comes back and says to these alumni, I'm one of you, I'm trying to fix what's broken, I'm asking you to trust me, they're looking at him, and that's why when Durant, the alumni, stood up and says, you have bad information, it wasn't just the guy before you, it was every guy before you, every president before you was mismanaging the finances of the university. That's because they have seen this go wrong before, and alumni know when things are going south, and they're trying to save their institution. It's why President Becton is trying to save his institution. That's why he took a hard job. He actually winds up becoming the director of FEMA. So this is a man that can do any job, but he chose to come back and lead his alma mater. And I think it's something that should be pointed out and something to be commended.
Yes. So he's inherited this mess, and he's going to try to dig out of it. And oh boy, does it get more messy. So we'll leave it on that note. I don't know if I'd have taken this job, but he loves Prairie View. So again, thank you so much for being patrons. Thank you so much, Blue. We'll try to do these maybe bi-weekly, maybe every 2 weeks we'll drop a new episode here and schedule it. I'll have Blue with me going over this incredibly long streak. So just keep these things in your head. The last win over Mississippi Valley State was probably the most sickos game of all time.
It's up there.
One of them. It's up there.
It's up there. I wouldn't say the most. It might not even be the most sickos HBCU game ever.
Oh, no. But, I mean, for Prairie View, to have a sickos win like that, and then the next game, they lose on an extra point to an NAIA school.
It seems like and starts having four picks.
And starts this incredible 80-game losing streak.
The second loss is 56 unanswered points.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's eight touchdowns.
So, again, thank you so much for being patrons, subscribing to our Substack. We appreciate it. Blue writes for the Substack. He typically does some of the things that we do during the year with the crazy old-timey language recaps. And he's awesome at it. He helps me out a ton with it because I cannot do it on my own. So shout out to Blue. Listen to Feed Your Mascot podcast. And we'll be back with episode 2 of the Prairie View Chronicles in a few weeks. Okay. Thank y'all so much. Have a great one.